Welcome to this edition of Our Working Waterfront. This is Chris Bricker, and joining me is co-host Aaron Berg, Port of Port Townsend's director. Aaron and I are standing in the lobby of the Port Townsend Foundry, established in 1883 on the waterfront and re-established in 1983 by Pete Langley. Before we go inside for a visit, Aaron, what's going on here at the port?
Well, it's another busy month. Boatyard is full, nearly full and filling up. I think our forecast shows us at max capacity by the end of the month. So that's pretty exciting. A lot of active projects. We are continuing to work through the Shorts Farm and the potential acquisition of the Shorts property. The Port Commission met yesterday and had continued robust discussions. We're talking to folks around the community and expect to know more next week, with the possibility of a special meeting of the Port Commission next week to potentially take action on that. Don't know yet, because we're still working with the family on the details. Otherwise, our time has been largely occupied by projects. The Point Hudson Jetties South is getting going with planning. The North is done for the season. RV parks reopening. The marina's reopened. We're working on more detail on our high ground to high ground, climate change, rising tides, resiliency, and water walk project. We're working with the Trails Coalition on some trail ideas with the Larry Scott and tying it over to the park and ride. Continuing to work on boatyard expansions and improving the stormwater system in the boatyard. And we have a project at the airport that's scheduled to go this year, which is a new connector between the taxiway and the runway. So really, everywhere you look, there are projects at various stages, and we are hopping.
All right. Well, thanks, Aaron. Thanks for your report this month.
All right. Well, thank you. Really excited today to be joined by Pete Langley, and I hope we'll hear a bit from him about his early days on port property, even. And really, when we think about the marine trade sector in Jefferson County representing, you know, effectively 20% of the economic activity, we at the port kind of think of it as all emanating out of the boatyard. This is a business not located directly at the boatyard, but one that absolutely serves boats in the yard as well as around the world. So excited to hear from Pete today as we walk around and tour the foundry.
The original Port Townsend Foundry was established in 1883. It manufactured streetcars, steam engines, and hardware for all of the local Victorian mansions. At its height in 1889, the company employed about 250 people. A century later, in 1983, Pete Langley re-established the Port Townsend Foundry. Pete was able to establish a portable foundry on a flatbed trailer within two blocks of the original foundry site. Well, he's going to tell us what happened since then. Hi, Pete. Welcome to Our Working Waterfront.
Thanks, Chris. Well, it was a very interesting ride and challenge to be able to start off, but I was able to locate in Point Hudson at the Pilot's Cottage, and that's where we restarted. The original foundry was in the Pope Marine Park area and in between the Pope Marine Park and the Cotton Building. So it's kind of an interesting place and area. There were a lot of manufacturing going on at that time, with the Quimper Manufacturing doing milling and all of that stuff, as well as the sawmill in Point Hudson. So it seemed like it was a good combination and a fun thing to bring back. Where I started out and moved from there was eventually in from Point Hudson to the Port of Port Townsend's Boat Haven, which we had a lease there for about 27 years, eventually landing out here in Glen Cove. We're currently in the former Northwest School of Wooden Boat Buildings facility. Right now, currently 7 full-time employees, but we're generally at 15. We're 7 short with the labor shortage, but hopefully we'll work itself out and we'll get back to the numbers we need to be. But in the meantime, we've got lots of little projects going across the country. So as we walk through, I'm sure we'll spark some interest and questions on what we're doing.
Well, Pete, before we go into the depths of the foundry, I want to ask you, what's your usual resource for labor for here at the foundry? Do you have apprentices? What kinds of backgrounds are you looking for?
Well, currently, I like to grab them as early as possible, like right before they get their driver's license, so they're less distracted. They're brought to here on the facility usually on time and can do that. So really, I think that's part of the next generation training thing we got to get back to. that I think there's a golden era time between 14 and 17 that if you can get the light bulb turned on, get them involved with things that inspire them, then they'll do better in the future. And luckily, I've had some fantastic employees that way over the years. So it's great to see Port Townsend kids do good, come back and be able to now take part back in their community and try to encourage as much involvement early on. And I guess we're going to be signed up also with the Maritime Centers, getting a grant for real world preparedness for some of our other deprived students. So we've signed up to be a mentor as well as a guide for some of that, to try to bring back some of the responsibilities and understanding what dedication and all of that thing is to a product and or to the type of skills you need to learn to be able to make something that's going to function properly.
Well, let's go inside and take a look around. We're standing in front of a table that's just chock full of all kinds of hardware. Pretty big variety here.
Yeah, we've got everything from some architectural parts. We've got stuff for the Navy from vacuum pump impellers that were part of a digitally printing process that we helped the Navy with 15 years ago. We've got parts that are new, just going out, you know, customers every day that we're pulling off this inventory and or packaging to sell. So that's a good thing, having a good variety.
Pete, what's the panorama of customers that you have for requests?
Well, we've got requests from everything from our carbon fiber hinges, a composite prepreg hinge, all the way to architectural stuff going into houses, using some of the marine hardware as either door pulls, cabinet pulls, or main pieces in there. So we do a lot of that. We have some artwork going on currently. We have all of our recycling project with our cleat benches that we manufacture that are in concrete. So our market's pretty much across the board. Everything from some of the mega yachts that are being built. We're doing projects for Westport Shipyard. We've got projects for private builders that are building 18-foot little ships, but they want everything specifically to do a suit a certain style and or image. So that's kind of where we come in.
And then what about these old Victorians around town over the years? What have you done for them?
Oh, over the years, we've done everything from doorknob reproduction, hinge reproduction. We're currently got a plaque to do for the National Heritage Registry for some of the Victorian buildings that didn't get their historic register plaque.
Hey, Pete, how about the recent project with Schooner Martha in terms of the parts that you made for the new spar?
Yep. Schooner Martha just had a new mainmast built, so we built the new masthead, intermediate bands, redid some of the turnbuckles we'd made previous to allow the new synthetic rigging to fit and the new thimbles that needed to be there. So that was a couple of months worth of work. Some of it was more pattern work, as we'll go upstairs and see what Katie's doing upstairs, but that pattern work is very intricate and takes a lot of dedication to make those things fit right. So Martha's one of the better sail training organizations out there that not only support the community at large with their efforts in the reworking and support of marine trades, but it's now become kind of partially a flagship, you'd say, for some of the work we do. Proud to have it on there and help support that organization. So Chris, right now we're standing in the molding area. We have a real simple philosophy trying to keep everything as environmentally friendly as possible. So the sand we primarily use is an olivine volcanic sand. This sand came up from Hamilton, just at the end of Highway 20 on the other side, where it's mined out of volcanic rock. The other binders we use are actually bentonite clay. So we use two types of bentonite clay and then anywhere from 3 to 4% water. We actually mix that sand together, get it to a consistency for the molds we're going to make. Once those molds are processed and put on the floor, then we're able to fill those cavities with the bronze alloy. And again, the bronze alloys we use are also from above ground recycling. So we work with a plant that's out of Bedford, Ohio, that specializes in converting scrap and other things into new certified alloy. So that allows us to recycle all our lathe chips, the slag, the grinding dust, any materials we collect off of scrapped boats or any of that can all go back, be reprocessed and turned into new certified ingots. So that's part of the philosophy of trying to keep the environment free of all of the contaminants that might be out there, but also help recycle material here that we can make new product from.
Our radio listeners just can't see this, but in addition to what Pete described, the pile of sand, you know, he's got some really interesting equipment, and I'm looking in particular at the,
I might call them mold shakers, but I bet there's a fancy name for them.
They're called squeeze jolt machines. So compaction tables with a way to put the top half over the flask and actually squeeze the sand together. A couple of them are portable, which that portable machine, one was made in the late 40s, the other was late 50s. For us, these portable machines allow us to move around the sand pile as well as get to where we can maul our sand or run it through aerators and be able to do it. Some of the bigger shops obviously are fully mechanized. If we could get to the, say, Travis Industries in Spokane, they move 90 tons of sand an hour. So the industry is doing real well for those that can afford to get into that niche. And that's where we form another niche, is we're a one-off shop doing job shop work. We can do one-offs faster than they can because they can't retool everything, where that's the advantage of a small shop with an existing tool base. And that'll be the patterns and stuff we look at. So right now we're close to 50,000 different little patterns and pieces that we can make. And so to be able to jump and grab one tomorrow and make that part tomorrow for just one piece is kind of our specialty. So anyway, we're here looking at some of the molds on the floor that are ready to be poured. Again, we've got multiple pallets of material that have stacked ingots and or what we call the gates and risers off of previous castings. But each one of the pallets is a certified ingot material that we use over and over. Our typical alloys will be everything from aluminum nickel bronze, silicon bronze, manganese bronze, red brass, tin bronzes, and then trace other alloys in those same categories, because they're like 31 flavors. You may have a strawberry, but there's a strawberry blend of some other kind in that same thing. So that's another specialty of ours, is where to put the alloy for its particular use, whether it's corrosion resistance or strength and or combination of the two. So whether it's underwater, up in the rigging, any of those kind of things, or it's, say, like the number one paper bearing machine, paper machine at the paper mill, all of those bearings are stuff we manufactured here locally. So they run real well if you know where the alloy belongs. So here we basically put crucibles in our furnace. We can melt up to 310 pounds of any alloy every other hour. So every hour and a half we can pour, put a new alloy in, do the same thing again. So when we get geared up and are ready to pour, we're usually pouring back-to-back pours, because once the furnace is up to temperature, you get better fuel mileage.
Pete, just briefly, there's a body of knowledge here that you have about metals and ingots and alloys and all the rest of that. Where'd that all come from?
A little bit of everything. Part of it's genetic curse, being that the family were involved in manufacturing. As a young kid, I was drug around to various different aircraft manufacturing plants, and that having an interest in how all those pieces were put together. Then eventually getting into the foundry industry happened more because my high school teacher was really a mentor and allowed me to dabble further than most of the kids would go. Eventually became a teacher's assistant, and so from that I got to read a little bit more about the metallurgy and how that worked. And then also with the sailing background that I got as a young child, allowed me to see how those alloys reacted out in the work field. So when you get to see pieces failing and or they're failing because of corrosion and all the rest, then you can go back and analyze why did that part break, and then find out, well, okay, it had 30% zinc in it and the electrolysis caused a problem for that zinc to disappear. Then you ended up with a copper iron mix, which becomes very brittle. And so all of those things lead to eventually now knowing what I know and how to change or manipulate even these alloys with very little trace elements to improve their quality and do that. And also is then a phenomena in the casting itself. As you can envision, say a tree having growth rings, and the tree grows and gets a new ring every year. Well, in a casting, it happens very short, but it has a frequency in which it solidifies, and it solidifies from the skin of the casting towards the center. And you can actually visually see those growth rings in a cut-off part of the casting. So as you make the casting and that solidification process happens more uniformly, then the better the part is. So those are all things we look at as we go through in the casting process to try to make the best part possible. We're making 100-year parts.
All right, what's next?
Well, we'll go upstairs to the pattern shop. I have a pattern up here that I keep out just because of the complexity and to show the skill that Katie's kind of learned in the pattern making end of it. But the one piece has 9 different cores, so that's 9 different pieces of sand that are made to fit into the mold that is just a 2-part cavity to make the part all hollow. And we'll be able to look and see the finished casting in the machine shop and do that. But up here, Katie is really working on various different patterns. She's currently working on a porthole reproduction because the boat wants that exact shape and style and fit in the exact hole it came from, but it was in iron and deteriorating. So we're building an all-new bronze one that will accommodate that, and then also some other pieces. So we'll step back here a little closer and you can take a look at one of our handiwork. So right now I'm looking at a piece of mahogany that's been glued up in multiple pieces, faceted, probably the 22 and a half degree slip pie slices that all get glued together. Then they were put on the wood lathe and turned. All of these parts, she's working to a 64th of an inch in tolerances, but she's also using what are called shrink rulers. So all of the castings that we do have a percentage of shrinkage that happens. So all the patterns are made oversize so that the casting can cool down and be the size to fit in the machine or fit together with whatever and still allow for machining tolerances. There'll be threads on the inside of this and a ring that retain the glass and various different pieces, but it's a real challenge and an art to be able to do that and understand the both seeing things from the inside out and or backwards to be able to visualize the final part. We use some digitally printed stuff, but we also, that's a silica based mold or a silica based sand, and that's bad for us environmentally or health wise. So the more of that we can keep out of the shop, it's better for us. The other sand that we use doesn't have any silica in it, so we don't have a silicosis issue. So we're trying to blend the two without compromising the environmental issue.
Part of what struck me is your pattern making shop is really as much art as science. It seems to me. I mean, the finished product is really, these patterns themselves are beautiful.
Yeah, there's no compromising in the amount of time or dedication you have to put in to get that pattern to that degree of finish or to the way the patterns are glued up so that they'll be around for 100 years. These patterns that we're taking, we could probably make 200,000 copies of it before it would break down if we treat it right. So the real goal is to make it so that I'm hopeful that in the future somebody will take this over and continue that legacy of making these parts and preserving the ones that are here. And again, they can be used in a number of ways. One is they can be scanned, so we can scale them to a bigger boat if that style or design is what they want, and only print molds for that particular project, so we don't have to retool. So the advantage of having a bunch of older style patterns will allow us to manipulate them in a way that we couldn't do 20 years ago.
So Pete, we're standing in the pattern room, the pattern storage room, and how many patterns you figure you got?
In this particular area, we've got close to 6,000 pieces. And I call it the tinker toy room because they're little pieces of wood that can be the size of a thimble for sewing up to pieces that are for a full-on ship.
Now I'm looking around and I'm saying to myself, how the hell do you know where everything is?
Yeah. I think Pete just remembers. What are you talking about?
Yeah. Luckily, I haven't got to the other side yet, or the dark side hasn't kicked in. There's only three of us we allow in this room to take stuff out or to bring it back. So it is real critical that we put it back where it belongs. They're basically alphabetical. I wouldn't say it's exactly the Dewey system, but we're trying. And that's a whole nother evolution for the shop. We just entered the grinding cleaning area where all castings come back and get ground and cleaned, as well as our cleat benches get processed in here, from building the molds to getting them ready for pouring in the cement and or cleaning up other parts. So a little bit noisier back here, but each part comes back through and gets processed as we get ready to take it off to the machine shop. Well, so we're here in the machine shop. We do a lot of different things. We're all numerical machines, no CNC. So the people that do work for me, they get to learn the math and how to actually dial the machines in, as well as keep them tuned up so that they can do a repetitive project if there's multiple pieces of the same thing to be done, but also how to change setups fairly rapidly and do. Oh, again, through holes for Westport Shipyard. We've got the big masthead that I wanted to show you that Katie did all the pattern work, and various other block parts and things that we're assembling in here. So it's a fun way to get there and take a rough part that may be rough unfinished and turn it into a finely machined piece so that all the components fit together.
I wish we could convey the aroma of the machine shop.
Yeah, a little bit of the cutting fluid and or cooling agents that we use on the lathe or in the mills. It's a little bit different than the smell in the foundry itself, because the sand and the hot, all that smells a little bit more burnt in here. It's a little different. So just pulled up some blocks in my hand. These are going to a small guard side design little cutter out that's being built. It's up in Maine and was being built in Philadelphia. But essentially, we're building every part from the boat, from all the keel bolts, all the stuff, bobstay, crans iron, whisker stays, turnbuckles, toggles, thimbles, all the shackles, all the blocks, everything. So it'll be a little ship. It'll have a little bit of Port Townsend sailing around Maine as it goes and gets to show off, but it's kind of that part that's fun for us to be able to get that in depth even on a little boat. It's no different than any Seiko or a Rolex. You can either go to the Rolex side or you can go to the Seiko side. They both tell time, they'll all sail, but some will have an antiquity that will be able to be passed on to their kids and literally last 100 years if they wanted to.
Pete Langley, the 1983 founder, the rebirth of the Port Townsend Foundry. Thank you so much for joining us on our Working Waterfront.